28. Zoya. They emerged from the tunnel in an unfamiliar part of the city, and Zoya wondered if Brekker was deliberately trying to disorient them. "We're in the Gelden District," Nikolai murmured. "The favored neighborhood of wealthy merchants." Leave it to Nikolai to have an accurate map in his head. It was as if they'd traveled to a different country, not a different part of town. The streets were tidy and lovely, all neat cobblestones and clean brick facades. Zoya noted the curtains in the windows, a woman walking home with her groceries, a housekeeper sweeping a stoop. Ordinary people living ordinary lives. They did their shopping, ate their meals, lay down at night thinking of the health of their children or the work waiting to be done in the morning. Could they find a way to give this peace, this ease, to Ravka? Would there ever be a time when Grisha were free to choose their paths instead of living as soldiers? It was something worth fighting for. They arrived at an elegant mansion with red tulips painted over the entry. Brekker rapped twice on the front door with the head of his cane. Zoya recognized the young man who popped his head out, Jesper Fahey. They'd met him when they'd last been forced to work with Brekker's crew. He was brown-skinned and gray-eyed and wore his hair shaved close to the scalp. If memory served, he was some kind of expert sharpshooter. "I'm not supposed to let you in," Jesper said. Brekker seemed unperturbed. "Why not?" "Because every time I do, you ask me to break the law." A voice from behind Jesper said, "The problem isn't that he asks, it's that you always say yes." "But look who he brought," Jesper said, gazing at Nikolai with delight. "The man with the flying ships. Come in, come in." Jesper threw open the door, revealing a grand entryway, and his shockingly bright combination of turquoise waistcoat and houndstooth trousers. The ensemble shouldn't have worked, but Zoya was forced to admit it did. He could give Count Kerrigan some lessons.
"I've been keeping up on your exploits, Captain Sturmhand," Jesper whispered conspiratorially.
Kaz Brekker had sussed out Nikolai's real identity at their first meeting long ago, but Zoya didn't think he'd shared it with his crew. They all still believed they were dealing with the legendary Sturmhand, rather than Ravka's king.
"You should join up with us sometime," Nikolai said smoothly. "We can always use a sharpshooter aboard."
"Really?
Are you forgetting how much you hate the open sea?"
asked a slender boy with ruddy gold curls and luminous blue eyes. Wylan. Something. She couldn't remember his last name. Only the Genya had helped to tailor him as part of their plan to secure Kuwe Yul Bo and his knowledge of Jurda Parem.
"I can change," said Jesper. "I'm extremely adaptable."
They followed Wylan and Jesper across a cluttered parlor strewn with musical instruments in various states of repair and a desktop littered with what looked like tiny piles of gunpowder. Through the tall windows, Zoya glimpsed a garden and a woman painting at an easel, and beyond her the slow-moving gray waters of the Geld Canal. The house had the starchy lines and precision of any rich merchant household in Ketterdam, but it felt as if it had been taken over by a combination of circus performers, street hooligans, and mad scientists. The dining room table was laden with paints and newly strung canvases, as well as what seemed to be the bits and pieces of some kind of chemistry experiment. Zoya picked up a swatch of fabric that looked like the color had been bled from it. "Is there a fabricator living here?"
"A friend of ours," said Jesper, throwing his lanky frame down in a chair. "An indenture who likes to pop by for meals. Quite the sponger."
"Has he never been trained? The work seems rudimentary." Jesper sniffed.
"I thought it had a certain rustic elegance."
"No," said Wylan. "He hasn't been trained.
He's stubborn that way."
"Independent," corrected Jesper. "Pig-headed.
But stylish."
Kaz rapped his cane on the floor.
"And now you know why I don't visit more often."
Jesper folded his arms.
"No one asked you to visit more often, and I don't remember issuing an invitation for lunch."
"I have a job that requires both of your skill sets."
Kaz? Wyland said, carefully collecting some of the half-full glasses around the room. We'd prefer not to do anything illegal.
That's not strictly true, said Jesper. Wyland would prefer it, and I want to keep Wyland happy.
He paused, unable to hide his interest.
Is it illegal?
Highly, said Kaz.
But the pay is excellent, offered Nikolai.
We don't need money, said Wyland.
Isn't it glorious?
Jesper sighed happily. Kaz smoothed a glove hand over his lapel, looking at no one.
It's for Inej.
Wyland set down the dirty glasses.
Why didn't you say so? What do you need?
To break into the base at Rentvir and misappropriate a very large supply of titanium.
That shouldn't be a problem, said Jesper, clearing a space on the table as Wyland rolled out a long sheet of paper beside a map of the Kerch coastline. Their security is terrible.
Nikolai raised a brow.
Mr. Brecker led us to believe the job was nearly impossible.
Zoya scowled.
He wanted to drive up his rates.
Thank you, Jesper,
said Kaz sourly. Jesper shrugged.
What can I say? I have a naturally honest disposition.
And I have a golden top hat, grumbled Kaz.
If you did, I would borrow it, said Jesper. Now, the first question is, how we move that many pounds of metal?
Nikolai nodded.
We have an airship, docked on Velgaluk.
Of course you do.
It's equipped with cables and winches and can manage a big cargo load.
Kaz pointed to the map.
The base is located on a scrawny spit of land that juts out into the sea. The weather there is perpetually bad. High winds, rain.
I can manage that, said Zoya. She could silence a storm as easily as she could summon one.
The problem is getting any boots on the ground inside the base. There's an armed checkpoint blocking the road in, and we don't have time to gin up fake credentials.
Not to mention we're all extremely recognizable,
Wyland said. Kaz lifted a shoulder.
One of the unfortunate side effects of success.
Is there any chance we can approach by sea?
Asked Nikolai.
There's no safe place to land, even if you're flying Kerch flags. Our only way in is to create a distraction for the guards and disable the spotlights in the towers. Then we just cut through the fence.
Sounds like an opportunity to be noisy, said Jesper, fingers tapping the table in an eager rhythm.
Like I said, Kaz continued, we have need of your particular skill sets. Once we enter, we can locate the titanium and signal our people in the air. But we'll need a way to cover the sound of the airship moving into place.
I can provide some rolling thunder, said Zoya. How is it you know so much about how to get into this place?
Nikolai grinned.
Because he was thinking about stealing the titanium himself.
Truly, what possible use could you have for so much titanium?
Kaz's gaze was cool.
If someone wants it, I can sell it. It's as simple as that.
Maybe,
thought Zoya.
Or maybe Kaz was like Nikolai, a boy with an unquiet mind, a man in perpetual need of challenge. He'd decided the base was a puzzle, and he couldn't resist finding its solution.
One question, said Wyland. What are you going to use the titanium for?
Why does it matter?
Asked Nikolai.
Because, unlike Kaz, I have a conscience.
I have a conscience, said Kaz. It just knows when to keep its mouth shut.
Jesper snorted.
If you have a conscience, it's gagged and tied to a chair somewhere.
This is a lot of metal, said Wyland, unwilling to let the subject go.
You're going to use it to build a weapon, aren't you?
Zoya waited. It was up to Nikolai to decide what to disclose to this little band of monsters. To her surprise, he reached into his coat pocket and tossed a sheaf of papers onto the table. David's rocket schematics. Wyland unrolled them, his eyes moving rapidly over the plans.
These are missiles. You need the titanium to improve their range.
Yes.
and you want to build something bigger.
Now Nikolai looked surprised.
Yes, maybe.
This is for Ravka. Because of the bombing at Olsalta, you blockaded Firda for them, and now you're helping them build a weapon.
That bombing was a test. It was meant to provoke. If Ravka doesn't respond, Firda will know they can't. They'll march, and they'll keep marching until every Ravkan is under Fjordan rule and every Grisha has been thrown into a cell.
Or worse, added Zoya. Jesper went to the sideboard and pulled a gun belt from the drawer. He slid twin pearl-handled revolvers into their holsters.
When do we leave?
But Wylan looked less sure.
This titanium could stop a war,
Nikolai said. Wylan ran a finger over one of the schematics.
And you can really arm and aim these things.
We can. Mostly.
Hopefully. I have some ideas, said Wylan. The problem is the nozzles, right?
Nozzles, said Jesper.
Yes, said Nikolai,
for launching and directing the rocket.
That is a ridiculous word, said Jesper.
It's an accurate word, objected Wylan.
And slightly ridiculous. May I?
Nikolai nodded, and Wylan began to sketch something onto the schematic. Zoya felt a sudden sharp sting to her heart. It was too easy to imagine David in this room, his head bent over those plans, the pleasure he would have felt encountering another person who could speak his language. She knew from the look in Nikolai's eyes that he was thinking the exact same thing. The knowledge of what they'd lost was like a tether between them, a hook in both of their hearts. Maybe she shouldn't have asked to be reassigned to Oskarovo. She wanted to work with him for the future they both dreamed of. She wanted to build a peace with him. Even when he married, she could stay at the palace, serve by his side. That was the right choice, the noble one.
And the thought of it made her feel like snatching a bottle of whiskey from the sideboard and downing the whole thing.
It didn't help that the idea of losing her hadn't seemed to bother Nikolai a bit.
That's good, she told herself. That's the way it should be. And what was there to lose, really? They were compatriots, friends.
Anything else was illusion, as cheap and false as the performances on East Stave.
We should get started, she said briskly. We have a lot of ground to cover.
It took another few hours to hash out what they intended, get the supplies they needed, and message the Cormorant. The plan seemed easy enough, and that made Zoya nervous. Wylan and Jesper would ride ahead to gather ground intelligence, then meet them at a bay only a few miles from the base. It was the easiest place for Zoya to board the Cormorant, so that she and her squalors could guide it into position over the base once Kaz and Nikolai were inside. Sturmhahn's Volkvolni would remain docked at Fifth Harbor, lest any accusations fly after the robbery. Though if all went according to plan, there would be no outcry, no alarm. They would be in and out of the base without anyone knowing, and the stockpile of titanium would appear as plentiful as before. Only now, most of it would be aluminum.
I don't think it's fair that I don't get to ride in the airship, Jesper said as Kaz hustled them out of the dining room.
Nikolai winked.
The King of Ravka will be grateful for what you're doing, and he has plenty of airships. Osalta's gates will always be open to you.
To all, Grisha, Zoya murmured as she drifted past. If Jesper wanted to hide his gift, that was his business, but the dragon had smelled his power the minute they'd entered the house. Zoya couldn't blame him for wanting to keep his abilities secret, to live his life full of love and misadventure without forever looking over his shoulder. Maybe someday being Grisha wouldn't mean being a target. Kaz, Zoya, and Nikolai traveled to the bay by oxcart. Jesper had told them there were now motorized trucks that had appeared among some of the wealthier merchant families, but they were useless in the narrow streets of the city. Besides, they wanted to be as quiet and inconspicuous as possible. As soon as they arrived at the cliffs Kaz had proposed for their meetup with the Cormorant, Zoya felt something was off. In the distance, she could see the lights of the naval base twinkling through the fog. But here on the clifftops, there was an eerie quality to the mist rolling in, and her dragon's mind stirred as if recognizing danger. She could only hope that ancient intelligence would stay quiet. She couldn't afford the emotional cost of the dragon's eye opening, not when they had a mission to complete. Far below, the beach was little more than a sliver of sand, bright and slender as a crescent moon. Waves broke against thickets of white rocks, jagged, hulking phantoms gathered at the shore, as if to stand vigil. They're guarding this place, Zoya thought. No boat was meant to find safe harbor here. And we're not meant to be here either. If the beach outside the naval base was anything like this, Zoya could see why no one attempted to approach from the water. The wind howled over the cliffs, a mournful chorus.
Going to be tough to bring the airship over the base and have it hover, said Kaz. There's no way we'll be able to get cargo up and down the lines.
Zoya lifted a hand, settling warmth and calm around them as the wind stilled. That won't be a problem once I'm aboard.
Be as subtle as you can, instructed Nikolai. We don't want the guards realizing they're in the eye of a storm.
Somehow I'll manage it.
Hoofbeats signaled the arrival of two riders.
We have a problem, said Jesper, sliding from his horse with ease.
Wyland dismounted slowly, clearly less accustomed to the task.
They've locked down the goods.
How? Asked Kaz.
There's some kind of new metal shell they've installed. Protects cargo from the elements.
Zoya frowned.
Titanium doesn't rust.
But there's other cargo in the yard on base, said Kaz. Iron. Potentially lumber that will rot if it gets wet. They used to just secure everything with tarps, but I guess the military is getting more particular.
This wasn't part of the intelligence you gathered? Zoya asked, her temper rising.
It must have been installed in the last 3 weeks. And when you rush a job, you don't get to complain when the job goes wrong.
You take your time or you take your chances, said Jesper.
And I don't take chances, added Kaz.
Zoya flicked her braid over her shoulder.
You're telling me you can't get past a metal roof?
Of course I can, but with a bigger crew. This isn't a bank vault, it's a military base. If Jesper and Wyland are handling the watchtowers, I'll need to get inside, locate whatever mechanism opens the shell, and get it to work without anyone in the base noticing. We don't know where the guards are posted inside or what kind of alarms are rigged up. Assuming we could even get inside, we'd need time to suss it out and at least 2 lookouts.
Surely the greatest thief in Ketterdam can outthink such a problem, said Nikolai.
I'm not susceptible to flattery, only stacks of cash. This can't be done. Not if you want it quiet and bloodless. If you're willing to take out a few guards or let Wyland blow a hole in this thing.
No, said Nikolai firmly. Hrovka's relationship with Kerch is strained enough. I don't want to give them an excuse to ditch their neutrality and use the Ismarzia to help Fjerda break my blockade.
If Inej were here, said Jesper.
Kaz's gaze was hard as flint.
You can keep saying that, but she isn't. The best we can do is wait. I can get 2 more dregs here by tomorrow. Annika. Roddy, maybe.
A high wail sounded from somewhere in the distance. A shrill cry that might be human or animal or something else entirely. Zoya felt a chill pass through her that had nothing to do with the cold.
This place isn't meant for us.
She felt it in her bones.
Saints, said Jesper. What was that?
Another wail followed, long and piercing. The fog seemed to seethe around them, forming shapes that melted into nothing before Zoya could truly make them out. Jesper set his hands on his revolvers.
These cliffs are supposed to be haunted.
You don't actually believe that, said Wyland.
I believe in all kinds of things. Ghosts, gnomes, true love.
Now another sound, a low hiss, seemed to crawl up from the sea, rising and falling in undulating waves. Zoya felt it like fingers brushing up her spine, making the hair on her arms rise.
Enough, she snapped. She'd had all she could stand of this saint's forsaken country.
She lifted her hands, and the fog rolled back in a gust, revealing a circle of people around them. Some of them in jackal masks, others with dark scarves pulled up to hide their faces. Moonlight glinted off the barrels of their guns.
Sule,
whispered Jesper.
You're not welcome in this place, said a gruff voice.
It was impossible to tell which side of the circle it had come from. That same low, crawling hiss followed.
We don't mean any harm,
Jesper began.
That's why you snuck up on our camp in the dead of night.
We should let the sea have them, said another voice. Send them screaming over the clifftops.
My apologies,
Nikolai said, stepping forward.
We had no intention of...
Click, click, click. Like fingers snapping, the sounds of triggers being cocked.
No, said Zoya, putting a hand out to stop him. Don't apologize. That will only make it worse.
I see, said Nikolai. Then what is protocol for an ambush?
Zoya turned to the circle.
Our goal is to stop a war. But this place was not ours to trespass on.
Perhaps you came looking for death,
said another voice. Zoya reached for the words her father had taught her, that she hadn't spoken since she was a child. Even then, they had only been whispered. Her mother hadn't wanted Suli spoken in their house.
Mati and Sheva Yelu.
This action will have no echo. The phrase felt sticky and unfamiliar on her tongue. She sensed Nikolai's surprise, felt the stares of the others.
You speak Suli like a tax collector,
said a man's voice. Hush, said a woman in a jackal mask, stepping forward.
We see you, Zeji.
Zeji, daughter. The word knocked the breath from her, an unexpected blow. The mask was the type worn all over the barrel, but those were cheap knockoffs. Souvenirs for tourists who didn't know what they meant. Among the Suli, the jackal mask was sacred and worn only by true seers. Daughter. It wasn't a word she'd wanted from the mother who had betrayed her, so why should it mean so much from the lips of a stranger?
We see the walls raised around your heart, the woman continued. That's what comes of living far from home.
The jackal turned, surveying them.
Shadows all around.
What did you say? Nikolai asked Zoya beneath his breath. How did you know those words?
100 lies came to her lips. 100 easy ways to walk away from this, to keep being the person she'd always been.
Because I'm Suli.
Simple words, but she'd never said them aloud. She could feel her mother's hands combing out her hair, placing a hat on her head to keep her out of the sun.
You're pale like me. You have my eyes.
You can pass. The family had kept her mother's name so that they wouldn't draw attention. Nabri, her father's name, was rubbed away like a stain. It was as if the woman in the jackal mask had heard her thoughts.
Your father faded, as we all do when we don't live among our own.
I haven't,
Zoya said. A protest? A plea? She hated the tremble in her voice. These people didn't know her. They had no right to speak about her family.
But think how brightly you might have burned if you hadn't always walked in shadow.
She waved them forward.
Come with us.
Are they going to march us to our death now?
Asked Jesper.
No idea,
said Kaz. Jesper cursed.
I wish I'd worn a nicer suit. Might be worth playing the king card now,
Kaz said to Nikolai.
Don't you think?
What king card?
Asked Wylan. The jackal's voice carried through the mist.
There are no kings we recognize here.
I might find that humbling, said Nikolai.
If I'd any practice with humility.
They descended a long path down the cliffside as the wind shrieked up from the water. Zoya's heart thumped wildly, a small creature caught in a snare. This was panic, skittering mindless panic. Why? She knew Nikolai didn't disdain the Suli. He never would. And she didn't care what these barrel rats thought. So why did she feel as if the rock was about to crumble beneath her feet? Just because she told them what she was. Was that all it took? Was this the terror of being seen? Halfway down, they passed behind a boulder and Zoya saw the entrance to a cave, its yawning black mouth carved into the side of the cliff. Again, the jackal spoke. If you wish to enter the base, this tunnel runs under the watchtowers and opens in a basement beneath Rentvir.
Where did it come from?
Asked Nikolai. But Kaz didn't seem surprised.
The Kurch used Suli labor to build their base.
We always leave a back door, said the woman in the jackal mask. There are two guards who patrol past the entrance to the basement. The rest is up to you. Daughter, you may use the cliffs to board your ship.
Why are you helping us? Zoya asked.
Can't we just say thank you and be on our way? Said Jesper.
The jackal-masked woman drew Zoya aside.
Your heart does not belong to you alone. When this is over, when it is all over, remember where you came from.
The king.
I speak of queens, not kings tonight. Remember, daughter.
Then she vanished into the shadows. Suddenly, they were alone at the tunnel mouth. The Suli were gone. Zoya whirled on Kaz.
You knew, didn't you? You never planned to go through the fence at the base. You knew the Suli were camped here. You knew they had a way in.
Kaz was already limping into the tunnel.
I don't walk through a door unless I know there's a window to climb out of. Jesper, Wylan, get back to the cliffs and take off the spotlights. Nikolai and I will tackle the metal shell from inside.
How could you be sure I spoke Suli? She called after him.
That was a spin of the mockers, we all. Lucky for me, my number came up.
One day your luck will run out, Mr. Brecker.
Then I'll just have to make some more.
He paused and turned to look back over his shoulder at her.
The Suli never forget their own, General Nazielinski. Just like crows.